Actually, it's a Juno afternoon here. I'm Andy Klein with you this afternoon, and we've got a really great show. I'm really looking forward to talking to all the folks that are here today. A busy day today. We're going to be talking to Skip Scheel here. He's a photographer in town. He's got some great presentations here. He's going to be talking on behalf of the Juno World Affairs Council and talking about his work in Palestine and Israel coming up. The Peace Park dedication is happening on Friday. We're going to be talking about that. The Jewish High Holidays, we'll be speaking with Rabbi Dov Gartenberg about those. And Ranger Doug is going to be calling in from Riders in the Sky. An exciting moment with Ranger Doug. Dense fog advisory has been canceled for the rest of today, but there's patchy fog that's going to be happening in the mornings, and mostly cloudy skies is in the forecast for tomorrow. First, here's National Native News.
Native Voice One. Native Voice One. The Native American Radio Service.
People taking pictures. That's what we're going to talk about next with Skip Scheel. And Bob Schroeder is also with me in the studio. Skip, you're here to give a number of talks, and one is going to be brought on by the Juno World Affairs Council. And Bob, you're on the Juno World Affairs Council. So thanks to both of you for coming in. Welcome to Juno, and thanks for coming and talking to us. Your particular area of study and that you've been working in is Palestine and Israel. And the talk that you're doing for the Juno World Affairs Council is really interesting. It's talks about the relationship between the need for water and that area. Can you just expound on that a little bit? Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, I try to look at various aspects of the water situation: sources, distribution, utilization, and what happens once the water is used, disposal, and chart the various power structures, Israeli and Palestinian, and what share each gets or has responsibility for. And I think the conclusion is fairly clear that the Palestinians get the shorter section of each one of those. So, for example, one of the primary water sources for both Israel and Palestine is an aquifer underneath the West Bank. It's called the Mountain Aquifer. And some 85% of that goes to Israel, even though the aquifer is largely under Palestine.
Is this water used primarily for human consumption, or is it for farming, or is there a combination, or how is that water mostly used?
In both cases, Israel and Palestine, as I recall, the larger share goes to agriculture, but that's being questioned now. So products or produce like bananas use a great deal of water, and so there are questions raised about that and suggestions made to limit the production of that kind of crop.
How long have you been going to this area and taking photographs?
Since 2003, 9 trips.
Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. Did you have an interest in this particular area, this area of water use before you went, or did that something that developed that as you visited the area?
I have been photographing water for quite a while. Boston Harbor, Charles River, Quabbin Reservoir, all water resources in the New England area. And just recently, and my sister Elaine, who's in the studio, can correct me if she has any further information, I remembered that the family legend about – one of the family legends about me is that I nearly drowned when I was very young. And that has come back to me partly because I dream a lot about being able to breathe underwater. And it never surprises me that I'm underwater and I'm just as a fish and I can breathe very easily. And so it led me to think that water is a core principle in my life. So it wouldn't be a surprise if I went to an arid region that has been suffering 10 years of drought to be particularly interested in water.
Yeah, fascinating. You have an affinity for it, but that you're sort of drawn to it as well. And how long have you been a photographer? That's something you've done your whole life? Or
again, my sister can confirm or deny this. Since the age of 7, I have been enraptured by photography, and it started when my father gave me a camera. And then off and on from college years on, I have photographed. But professional photography started around 1980. Professional meaning I earn my living from it.
Mm-hmm. Do you see yourself as kind of an environment? Not. I don't mean that in an environmental way, but do you take photos of people? Do you take photos of animals? Do you take photos of landscape? I mean, what areas do you feel like you have an affinity with when you're taking photos?
Well, in the case of Israel-Palestine, I concentrate on the people. But I'm not. I try not to limit myself to that because the land is so beautiful. And for some themes like the Jordan River, which I've worked with, and water resources, the land is going to play a major role. But I don't only do Israel-Palestine or politically based photography. I do a great deal of landscape and portraiture.
So tell me a little bit more about some of the other work that you work in.
Well, I teach photography at the Cambridge Center for Adult Education, and used to teach through an institute at Harvard. And much of that is environmentally oriented. So I conduct a series of seasonally based workshops, meaning spring, winter, etc. And we look at the light and try to photograph it. But that all plays into Israel-Palestine, too, because light is a major factor there, the Mediterranean light.
Yeah, is there something specific about that area that, as a photographer, you see that's just different than other areas?
Well, aside from the politics, you mean?
I mean physically. When you go there as a photographer, is there something that's – you just mentioned light. Is there – something that maybe I would go and not notice that, but you go and say, boy, there's something exceptional about something here.
The light is a seemingly contradictory mixture of glaring or blasting and suffused or diffused. Now, it's very hard to describe this, but it struck me when I was there, and I hadn't realized that's what I would find, but why not? We've heard of the Mediterranean light that artists are challenged by. And so it is on the Mediterranean, and there would be that light. I believe one of the reasons for this strange combination of light is the limestone base. So most of Palestine, Israel, is either the surface is either limestone or sand, both of which reflect. That's very unlike North America, which has so much vegetation, and therefore the light is a single source from the sun.
Mm. Well, Bob, let me turn to you. I got to get in a plug for the actual speech that's happening. The Juneau World Affairs Council has brought Skip in here to talk. So tell me a little bit, some of the particulars about the presentation.
Well, thanks, Andy. As you know, Juneau World Affairs Council brings a series of speakers to Juneau throughout basically the school year. We kind of shut down over the summertime. And Skip's our lead-off speaker this year. And he'll be speaking tomorrow at 5 p.m. at the KTOO studio. And that talk will also be taped and later broadcast statewide. And
then on 360 North.
On 360 right? North through KTOO. And Skip has a number of other talks on slightly different topics. And perhaps you can go through those, Andy, because
so
I gave you the sheet for
I'll
them.
Just run through the titles and the places here, and then, Skip, maybe you can expand on them a little bit. But one of them is happening on Thursday, September 26th at 7 p.m. at the Aldersgate United Methodist Church in the Valley, and that's called Eyewitness Gaza, which is a provocative title. Israel, the Occupied Territories, and Nonviolent Resistance is a talk on – you're going to be busy – is a talk on Friday, September 28th, 7 p.m. That's at the UAS Egan Library as part of the Friday at Egan series. And then Tracing the Jordan River Through Israel and Palestine, that's happening Sunday at 7 p.m., September 30th at Northern Lights United Church down here in the Flats. And once again, that's Tracing the Jordan River Through Israel and Palestine. So maybe let's just go through those and just tell me just a little bit about each one of those. Eyewitness Gaza, what is the focus of that one?
Conditions and struggles. So as many people may know, Gaza is completely surrounded by wall or water that is then controlled by Israel. So the Gazans, which is part of Palestine, have no sea, land, and water access is all controlled by Israel, even though Israel claims they are not occupying the country. And I've been able to go there 5 times. Through the American Friends Service Committee and work that I do there, and try to understand the situation and depict it through my photography.
The other one is Israel, the Occupied Territories, and Nonviolent Resistance. That's the one happening Friday.
That's a depiction or analysis of how the occupation works. Some call it the matrix of control. And in addition, I concentrate on various forms of resistance to that by Israelis, Palestinians, and internationals. That's largely nonviolence.
and then tracing the Jordan River through Israel and Palestine. That sounds like more of a scenic talk, perhaps.
Yes and no. It offers a cross-sectional view politically, historically, and hydrologically of the situation. So I trace the Jordan River from the headwaters, one of the headwaters, to where it disappears into the earth before it reaches the Dead Sea.
Well, great. So many opportunities to see you speak, and each one of these things has a different focus. So try to take in all four if you can. Once again, it's Skip Scheel, photographer. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you, Andy. He's speaking tomorrow night right
here at the KTO studios. That's at 5 o'clock, and that's the Juneau World Affairs Council bringing him here, the hydropolitics of Palestine and Israel. He'll also be speaking Thursday, Friday, and Sunday. Is there a place that, Bob, do you know if there's a place that can go that people can see a little bit of this? I'm just sort of looking here, trying to figure out if there's a spot that people can find this.
Unless you have a better idea. My website, which is teeksaphoto.org, teeksaphoto.org. And look for the public presentations link.
Great. Teeksa Photo. That's TEEKSA photo.com or org. That's where you can find out more on Skip Scheel. Skip, thanks so much for coming in. I appreciate it.
And thank you, Andy.
Thank you so much.
Lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world at one, and I believe it could be someday it's going to come. 'Cause out on the edge of darkness, there rides a peace train. About the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, peace train sounding louder.
Ride on the peace train.
Ooh, ooh. Come on, the peace train. It's peace train.
Yeah, the peace train. And people concerned with peace are with me right now. Don Birdseye and Phil Smith, and you guys are going to be part of the Peace Park dedication that's happening on Friday.
That's correct.
It's an exciting, nice project that's happening in that little park that's right by the Diamond Courthouse, right below the Diamond Courthouse. Is that right?
That's correct, yeah. Right across the street from the Barron's Branch.
Okay, so tell me a little bit more about this project and the art that went into it and how this came to fruition.
Well, I'm a shop owner on Seward Street. And back in 2005, when they were digging the sewer for Seward Street, the city brought the merchants together and said, this is what the street is going to look like. And it included that little pocket park where the log cabin used to be.
This is when all those glass awnings went in around the Diamond Courthouse and all that kind of development
that
happened.
Yep. And at a chapter, Veterans for Peace chapter meeting, I said, why don't we make a peace park in Juneau? And 7 years later, here we are.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So how did you decide, so a peace park, and that you felt like the way to define that was through some pretty significant piece of artwork. Is that right? Is that how that came up?
That is a part of it to be.
Okay.
What we did is we found out that we couldn't just have a peace park. You cannot dedicate a park to a concept. And so we kicked it around and decided that of all the people that we knew who was a Juneau person and who was no longer with us, so we wouldn't make a big mistake by dedicating it, the general consensus rose that Bishop Kenny, who was here between 79 and 95 when he died of an aneurysm in the Holy Land, we thought that it'd be great to name it after him. And so we wrote a letter to the city and the Parks and Rec Board and the Assembly. Both unanimously went along with it, no controversy whatsoever. And it's taken us a while and it ended up that we're sort of taking the lead on this. The city has been extremely cooperative. The church has been great. The public has been great. But everything sort of fell to us, and so it didn't go as quickly as it otherwise would have. But part of what we're doing is Juno artist Jim Fowler has prepared a model of what will be an 8 to 10 foot sculpture of a very whimsical, very colorful, almost cartoonish piece.
Childlike, sort of really fun.
And we're going to call it Growing Peace, and it will be mounted there in the park. And what we're doing, in addition to dedicating it on Friday, is we're kicking off a fundraising effort because we need about 20,000, maybe a little bit more, to get that work fabricated and shipped and installed.
It's exciting, though, to think about another piece of public artwork in Juneau will be a really great addition.
Especially in such a drab corner of downtown.
Yeah, I mean, it is a corner of town that when the sun's out and hitting right, boy, it's a great place, and there's even chess boards on the tables built in and that kind of stuff. And I've definitely sat there before and had lunch, but it was the old log cabin, and that used to be I remember so well sitting on the lawn there and kind of hanging out in front of the log cabin there when it was there. But that, of course, is a thing of the past, part of Juneau's past now.
Tell you how old I am. I remember before they put the log cabin there.
Right. Well, so tell me exactly what's going to happen on Friday.
Well, at 5 o'clock, Phil gets to be host. And you know the drill right now, Phil.
Well, I'll be the MC, but we're really pleased because there's a real sort of joining of effort around this thing. There's a couple of bagpipers are going to play with us, a gentleman named Kevin Smith and Scott Marnin will play the bagpipes to sort of assemble people. The bishop is a current bishop, Burns, will speak. Missouri Smythe with their Alaska Youth Choir will present a song. We have an original poem by that Bridget Smith has written. And then another song, I think, and then a bagpipe piece. And then the Parks and Rec director, who is Kent Fisher, has a few words to say, and he will actually dedicate the park. I guess it sort of ends up saying, and now this is hereby dedicated.
Hereby dedicate the park, yeah.
Right. And at that point, the canvas, which has been covering the name, will come down, and so the park will be permanently named at that point.
Oh, so has the name been kind of carved into stone or something like that, or what is the name there already, or? Or going to be there?
It's going to be there.
Okay.
It's being prepared as we speak.
Okay.
And it'll be mounted by Friday.
Great. Okay. I see. Well, that's great.
Aaron Elmore has been doing the work on that together with Jim Fowler. And I don't know if you remember, but in the back of that park, there's an indentation in the concrete. It's about, 14 feet long, and it's inset about a couple inches. And so that will be filled with the name of the park and the whole long name of the park, the Bishop Michael H. Kenney Memorial Peace Park. And then elsewhere on a different concrete panel, there'll be about a 2.5 by 2.5 foot plaque that has the information about the bishop and about the park and a photo of the bishop and a quote from him, which I can't give you off the
can't
top
recite,
of
my head.
People are going to have to come and read it.
Nice. Right. Well, it seems to me, having just known Bishop Kenney just a little, just having worked with him some, and it really just seems so much in the spirit of what he would have wholly endorsed himself. It's a really nice gesture to a great idea to say, okay, well, we want a peace park. Who would be the great person to dedicate in Juneau? I think that's a terrific choice. Yeah.
And one of the things, and I don't want to monopolize this, but one of the things I think that most people realized was that the bishop was a proponent of peace on all levels. He was a believer in internal peace, that each of us has to sort of try to work for peace within ourselves. and certainly within the community. He was always building bridges and very, very ecumenical in his outlook. And, of course, he was also well-known throughout North America as a leading advocate against nuclear weaponry, which is one of the things that Veterans for Peace is certainly dedicated to as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we think it's entirely appropriate, and we're really looking forward to it. I just like the idea of people being able to walk by there and sit down and read the brochure, read the thing, and when the sculpture's in place, it'll just be great.
Well, so. I think that Bishop Kenny has worked it out to have partly cloudy skies for Friday as well. That is in the forecast.
It's going to be a beautiful day.
That's
on
right.
Friday.
It's
a good day to turn out, dedicate the Peace
it's
Park.
It's going to be great. That's happening at 5 o'clock on Friday. It's the Peace Park dedication for the Bishop Kenny Peace Park, and that's right there, right behind the Diamond Courthouse, that little park there.
Right. And one other thing is when we're done, the bagpipers are going to lead us down the street, and we're going to file into the Silver Bow, where we have set up a reception in the back room, and there will be an open mic, and other musicians, Pat Henry and others, are going to play there. And that will sort of be the kickoff for the fundraiser.
There you go.
That we need to do to raise the bucks for
and
the sculpture.
And that's the next step, is to make sure that those funds get raised and so that the sculpture, the full idea here comes to fruition. Well, Phil Smith and Don Burtz, I thanks so much for coming in and letting us know about the dedication happening at the Peace Park starting Friday at 5 p.m.
Thank you, Andy.
Okay.
I'll see you there.
Yes, sounds great.
And you'll have your mic with you.
Yes.
See you.
Well, for the rest of today, it's supposed to be mostly cloudy skies, and then we've got mostly cloudy skies for tonight as well. Slight chance of rain, mostly cloudy tomorrow with a slight chance of rain in the morning as well. But then starting into Friday, we've got partly cloudy skies, and that's forecast through Friday, Friday night, and Saturday, so we're looking forward to that. Coming up now, here's Garrison Keillor with Writer's Almanac.
Here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, September the 19th, 2012. It's the birthday of William Golding, born in Cornwall, England, 1911. His first novel, also his best-known book, Lord of the Flies, written when he was working as a schoolteacher, rejected 21 times before a new editor at Faber & Faber in London decided to take a chance on it. It was on this date in 1940, a Polish soldier named Witold Pilecki allowed himself to be captured by the Nazis. He was a captain in the Polish resistance, and he wanted to find out what was going on near the town of Auschwitz. His superiors thought it was just a German camp for prisoners of war, but Pilecki suspected that something else was happening. So he joined a group of Polish citizens who were being rounded up by Nazis. Pilecki, leaving behind a wife and two young children, was taken to Auschwitz. He was given a number, 4859, and he soon realized that this was a Nazi death camp. He stayed there for 3 years. He smuggled out detailed reports of what was happening. reported on the gas chambers and the ovens to dispose of human remains, and his reports were so horrific that nobody in the Polish underground believed him. His reports made their way to the British and the Americans. He suggested ways to liberate the camp, but still nothing was done. Finally, in 1943, Pilecki, frustrated by the lack of action, faked a case of typhus. He escaped from the hospital. After the war, the Polish underground recruited him to spy on the Soviets, and he was captured by the Polish communist regime, executed for espionage in 1948. It was on this date, 1934, that Bruno Hauptmann was arrested for the kidnapping and murder of Charles Lindbergh's baby. He was convicted of the murder and executed on the basis of circumstantial evidence. His widow, Anna, spent the rest of her life trying to have the verdict overturned, but to no avail. And it was 30 years ago today, in 1982, a computer scientist named Scott Fallman first suggested the use of a colon, a hyphen, and a parenthesis to represent happy and sad faces, the first emoticons. Here's a poem for today by Stephen Dobbins, Cézanne's Seclusion. "I have begun to think," he wrote in a late letter, "that one cannot help others at all." This from a man who once called friendship the highest virtue. And in another he wrote, "Will I ever attain the end for which I have striven so long?" His greatest aspiration was certainty, yet his doubts made him blame himself wrongly, perceiving each painting a disaster. These swings between boldness and mistrust, intimacy and isolation, led him to stay at home, keep himself concealed, becoming a sort of hermit whose passion for the world directed every brushstroke, changed each creation into an expression of tenderness, which he dismissed, writing, "A vague sense of apprehension persists." Cézanne's Seclusion, a poem by Stephen Dobbins from his book Body Traffic, published by Penguin and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, celebrating 100 years of discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Programming support comes from the Mount Roberts Tramway, presenting their 16th annual Oktoberfest, Friday and Saturday, September 21st and 22nd from 5 to 9 p.m. More information at 463-3412.
Are you under 20 and wish you could return to high school?
Join us Saturday, September 29th for a special drop-in day at Zach Gordon Youth Center.
From 1 to 4, you or someone you know can instantly re-enroll in high school, get free health and guidance services,
free food, and the chance to win some great prizes.
Plus, two teens who choose to go back to school will get a $1,000 internship at KXLL Radio.
That's a high school drop-in day Saturday, September 29th from 1 to 4 p.m. at Zach Gordon.
Support for KTOO comes from GCI. We are all connected, providing Alaskans access to the world with cable TV, internet, local, long distance, and wireless phone service. On the web at GCI.com.
Hard not to smile when the klezmer music cranks on there. It's certainly fun stuff. I'm with Rabbi Dov Gartenberg. Thanks so much for coming in.
Pleasure to be here.
And we wanted to just talk about the high holidays that are upon us here. Tell us a little bit about what's happening among people in the Jewish faith in Juneau here right now.
Well, this is our busy festival season. We have really an entire month of festivals. The first part of it, the first 10 days, are called the Days of Awe or High Holidays. And we just celebrated the Jewish New Year's on, when was it? It seems just a couple days ago.
Okay.
This last started on Sunday evening, and then we count 10 days to the Day of Atonement.
So Rosh Hashanah is the New Year's.
Right, Rosh Hashanah.
The anniversary of Adam and Eve and
creation of the world.
Creation of the world, yes, all that stuff, right?
And we blow the shofar, the ram's horn, and we also, it's a day of prayer. In fact, the first 10 days, particularly Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, are considered to be days of prayer and reflection. And the primary purpose of the time is actually to do a moral accounting of one's life in the past year, to repair relationships with those around you, and to prepare for the Day of Atonement, which is a reconciliation with God.
And what's the historical basis on that? This is the tale of the golden calf and Moses and all that. That's the part of this that we're talking about. Is that correct?
Well, in the rabbinic lore, mm-hmm. the tradition that Yom Kippur actually is the anniversary of Moses' appeal after the golden calf, although I'm not sure a lot of Jewish people know that unless they've had an extensive education. But these festivals, plus the festivals that follow, the Festival of Tabernacles, are biblical festivals. They're in the Torah, and they're part of the commandments which Jews observe or practice in following the Torah. So they're marked, and they've been observed since the most ancient times. And, of course, there's a lot of lore that's accumulated around the holidays people learn, various ways. But it does mark a biblical festival.
And as you say, that it becomes a time, the time of atonement and reconciliation, not just internally, but also externally.
Right. Both in they say that you repair relationships between your fellow human beings and God and even creatures. So it really is and you're actually you're supposed to go to someone you did wrong to and apologize. That's actually the most important aspect of the holiday. It's not just sitting and praying, which is very important too, but to actually change your relationships with others, usually the ones who are closest to you.
And do you feel that that happens? Do you feel that people do that, or do you feel that I'm sure that's part of a big part of your role as
that's
the rabbi?
Rabbi always right. wants people, encourages people to do that, and I think people do that. I think they're aware of it. You know, it's something that we come back to every year and try to deepen and understand. I share with people how I try to do it and take it very seriously. This year, in fact, we're emphasizing that is we're. For the first time in Juneau, in fact, in many places, we're reviving an ancient feast, which was a feast prior to Yom Kippur, which was meant for reconciliation between families and friends and people. You eat, you prepare for the fast. And the tradition is you can't really pray or enter the Day of Atonement without having made an attempt to repair relationships with others. So the meal actually serves the purpose of gathering and saying, look, I really apologize what I did during the year, and let's share a feast together and prepare to fast together. It's a beautiful tradition.
You'll be doing that here?
It's Tuesday evening, the 25th, 4 to 6 p.m., and you can go to the website of my Jewish organization to look. I'll give you that information if you'd like. But it is open to the community. There's a charge for it because actually the food is going to be pretty wonderful. But it will also be a lot of symbolic foods that suggest themes from the Day of Atonement. So it's quite a beautiful experience.
Can you go through that a little? Tell me a little bit about what the symbolic foods would be, and then also just about what's the kind of traditional wonderful fare as well.
Well, some of the symbolic foods. This was created. I mean, there are examples of this feast in the Talmud. Several examples of rabbis who would come back from the academy and come to their families on Erev Yom Kippur, they called it, the eve of Yom Kippur. And actually, the stories are somewhat negative examples because they tell all the difficulties that these families had. But they always gathered for the meal, and things would. That's where people tried to repair the relationships. So building on those traditions, that we have these symbolic foods that I work with a chef in Seattle to put together. We use on the theme of tshuva, repentance, which is a major theme. We use kreplach, which is a European Jewish food, which is like a dumpling, because the inside is key, that you begin the process of repentance from the inside and work outside. We use goat's cheese to symbolize atonement, because the goat, there was a scapegoat, a story in the Torah, in the Bible, about the scapegoat that bore the sins of Israel. We use pumpkin seeds. Where do you get pumpkin seeds from? Because Jonah, which is a book that's read on Yom Kippur, sits under a pumpkin plant in chapter 4 of the book of Jonah. So all these allusions to texts, and actually it's one of the ways that I introduce some of the beautiful texts that we read on Yom Kippur at the meal through the foods. So it's very special. It's sort of like it's a Passover. People know Jewish feasts from Passover, where you have a lot of symbolic foods as well. But one of my purposes is to spread that tradition of sacred feasts and making food a way of experiencing really important ideas.
Yeah, and so this. Tell me a little bit more about this idea of these fall festivals and this new kind of revival of a ritual that you've been talking about.
Well, we're doing that feast, which is a revival of that particular ritual. We are also having, after Yom Kippur, the festival of Sukkot. Our synagogue, the synagogue here in Juneau, is named Sukkot Shalom, which means shelter, the shelter of peace. And then in the festival of Sukkot, we build shelters and we eat our meals. And some even very, very hardy people sleep in their Sukkot over the week of the festival. And we'll have a lot of festivities culminating with the celebration of a holiday called Simchat Torah, where we end the cycle of reading the Torah. We read the five books of Moses every year throughout the whole Torah, and then we celebrate the ending and the renewal of the beginning of the reading with dancing with the Torah scrolls that we do. That's in October. I think October 8th is when we're celebrating. So it's actually wonderful, and you're quite exhausted at the end of the holidays.
That's what I was going to ask you to kind of go through this, and I'm certainly in your position. I mean, it must be. This is prime time for you here.
It's prime time. It definitely is prime time. You know, it's like rabbis. We say accountants on the 15th of April. This is rabbis in the month of Tishrei. We're working quite. It's quite crazy.
What are the next? As we go through the year, what are the next big kind of moments for you and big times when people are gathering and.
Well, actually, it's one thing, to say it on the radio, is that I always counsel Jews not – the holidays are very important, and we do get big crowds at the synagogue for especially for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. But Jewish life is a daily thing, and so the cycle of Sabbath is actually the most important part. And so I encourage people – part of what we're doing with these feasts is to revive the Jewish traditions of hospitality, where we – have Sabbath meals and share a table with friends and people in the community. That's a very big thing for me, and I always emphasize that. And these special meals are ways in which we share with the community, invite others to share in some of the beauty of these Jewish festivals.
And just for you to encourage people to get into that cycle of observing Sabbath and everything else
and
that goes into
the cycles. Judaism is very attuned to the cycles of nature and being aware of the changing seasons and rain, but tying that to a way of improving the world. And so I think the beauty of the Jewish calendar is really extraordinary. And so that's one of the things I try to convey in my teachings.
Great. Well, one more time, just let people know what day is it they could come by? Or
sure.
What,
they can check the synagogue website, which is www.sukkatshalomalaska, Shalom, Shalom, alaska.net. And that will have a full schedule of all the festivals. And then if you have a pen, you can write my website, which is www.panimhadashot.org, has the information about this feast. We call it the Feast Before the Fast. and if you'd like to come, I'll have information there. Or you can contact me, and I can let you know more.
And just
details.
To touch on just the fast, what goes into the fast, and how long does that go? And
fast is a 25-hour fast. Mm-hmm. The fast is also very ancient, and the idea of fasting is to break down the body a little bit to be part of the spiritual process of reflecting. And it's very important, by the way, in Jewish tradition that you only fast if you're medically able to fast. So there's exemptions for children and for people who have dealing with illness, but it's a serious fast, and people are in synagogue all day from the night they go home, but they come back and the tradition is to be in synagogue all day. So it's a very special, it's a very distinctive observance in terms of the spiritual power of it.
And this physical change that's happening to you while you're fasting,
it
gets you in touch with the spiritual nature of what you're trying to observe.
Right. But it's fascinating within the tradition that we read a passage from Isaiah 48 that actually the prophet he criticizes the people for being fasting without moral purpose. He says, you can't be religious unless you live ethically. It's one of the great passages in the Jewish tradition. And it's said right in the middle of the fast while people are really complaining and they're really miserable. Right. You know, so, but the prophet's point is well taken, and it's beautiful to have it embedded in the readings of the day.
Well, thank you so much for coming in and explaining to us the beautiful tradition that you are about to go through here, and even during your prime time, taking time to come here and let us know what's happening. It's Rabbi Dov Gartenberg, and thanks so much for coming in. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, and say the greeting, Shana Tova. May you have a good New Year's.
Same to you.
And I lead old Dan. I'm gone to Montana for to throw the hula hand. They feed in the gulch, they water in the draw. Their tails are all matted, their backs are all raw. Ride around, little dogies, ride around and slow. They're fiery and snuffy and raring to go. Jones had a daughter and a son. His son went to Denver, but his daughter went wrong. His wife got killed in a bloody knife fight. Still he keeps singing from morning till night. Ride around, little dogies, ride around and slow. They're fiery and snuffy and raring. Saddle from the wall, put it on my pony and lead him from his stall. Tie my bones to his back, turn his head to the west. Let me ride forever on the plains I love best. Ride around, little dogies, ride around and slow. They're fiery and snuffy and raring to go. Ride around, little dogies, ride around.
Hey, buckaroos, get ready to saddle up with Riders in the Sky in concert. Live life the cowboy way. You heard him in Toy Story. Now see this Grammy Award-winning group at a show the whole family will enjoy. Monday, September 24th, 7 p.m. at the JDHS Auditorium. Brought to you by the Juno Arts and Humanities Council and KATH-TV, with support from Westaff. Tickets available at the Jack, Hearthside Books, and online at jahc.org.
And that's going to be a great concert, and we're lucky enough to have Ranger Doug from Riders in the Sky with us on the phone right now. Ranger Doug, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you, Andy. Great to talk to you, and we're sure looking forward to coming back to the Last Frontier.
Yeah, you've been here before. When was the last time you were here?
You know, I don't remember. It's been quite a few years, I'd say 6 or 7 years, but we've been probably 4 or 5 times to Alaska.
A lot of miles on the saddle since, huh?
Well, yeah, we've done 6,320 appearances.
That is amazing. You have done that many appearances. About how many shows a year are you doing?
Well, the average is out to 182.
Wow. That's a lot of work, yeah. And a lot of miles on the road. I mean, tell me a little bit about that. What is it? What's it like, the life of a touring music group that has, of course, all of the, you know, the whole show that you guys put on? Tell me a little bit about what the grind is like.
Well, the grind is not terribly glamorous. You know, we spend a lot of time in a motorhome. We have it outfitted with bunks and stuff like a bus would be. Only since there's only 5 of us that travel together, we don't need a great big touring bus. But we just do a lot of driving, see a lot of highways. We've been to every state and 11 or 13 different countries, I forget. That's just what you do to get to work. And then once you get on stage, all that other stuff goes away and you just have fun.
Yeah. How did the fascination with this kind of music and this kind of, remembering this pioneer spirit, how did that come about for you?
I think all of us grew up in the 50s, and Roy Rogers and Gene Autry had TV shows, and you could hear Western music on the radio, and it was just part of the fabric of American life in those days. It isn't so much anymore, but we fell in love with it then and never fell out of love with it.
Yeah, and just kept on punching dogies.
Right. We just fell in the 70s when we started this band. This was wonderful music worth preserving, that it wasn't just kitsch or camp or something, something reminiscent of childhood nostalgia. It was, you know, vital, living music that ought to be preserved and brought to another generation, and now another generation yet.
Yeah, and I mean, I agree with you that to me is why I think that it's had such staying power. I mean, as much as people understand that you're doing a music that's of a time and era, it's never goofy, it's never silly, it's always fun, but also beautiful,
right,
and skillfully done, and all the amazing harmonies and all that stuff. Tell me a little bit of, you know, so there's just so much work that goes into that, I think. Tell me a little bit about what it takes to, how do you guys decide on new songs? How do you guys go about the process of developing your repertoire like that?
Well, there is a real balance because, of course, it's a very funny show that we do. We have a lot of humor. And, if it was just slapstick, I don't think this career would have lasted this long. The backbone is that we do beautiful music and do it well, and we try to write new songs in the classic style that sound like they could have come out of a Western movie in 1942.
Right. And who does the bulk of the songwriting, or how are those duties kind of divvied up?
Well, we all contribute. I suppose numerically I've probably written more than the rest of the guys, but every one of us writes, and we feel that we're keeping the tradition alive by adding to it as we go. We don't want to be a museum piece and just be the 1937 Sons of the Pioneers, you know.
Right, right. Tell
we could never be that good anyway.
Well, if you could just go through the group for me and introduce, just tell me who's in the group and what their specialties are as you talk about each person who's going to be performing here in Juneau.
Sure. Well, Too Slim is the guy that started the group with me. and he plays the bass, and he sings the baritone part in the trio, and he's the funny man. He's the guy that's really given us a career through all these years, because people come back again and again just to see what kind of goofy stuff he'll come up with.
He's the Meadowlark Lemon of the group.
Right. And
I'll tell you something. Even that reference dates me.
That's true. Yeah, how many of your listeners know? But I do.
Yeah, okay. But anyway, so Too Slim. All right.
And Woody Paul is the king of the cowboy fiddlers, and this year he was inducted into the National Fiddler Hall of Fame. So we're very proud of him. He's our tenor, and he plays he's one of the greatest fiddlers in Nashville, which is saying something. And he writes some songs. Joey the Cow Polka King is the new kid. He's only been with us 24 years.
just wet behind the ears.
Right. We're going to have to take him off that $50 a week draw after a while.
He's going to catch on sooner or later.
Sooner or later, right. He plays the accordion. He had a great career in the polka field. Was Frank Yankovic's right-hand man, and in the days when Frank Yankovic was very hot.
Yeah, it's Weird Al's dad for those youngsters out there, yeah.
And he's become a very respected Grammy-winning producer of Western and country music and polka music. And he plays the accordion, and he sings the off part, whatever we need, a sixth or a ninth or somebody to sing, water, water. Well, that's Joey.
And he's just got the ear. He's got the ear to kind of pick that up, huh? Then
he has incredible ears. He teaches us all the parts. He's award-winning producer. He produces our records and he does our arrangements too. And I play the rhythm guitar and sing the melody, usually in the trio, and do the yodeling. Oh, dee, and write a lot of the songs.
Just so people know, I didn't ask him to do that beforehand. That was just spontaneous.
Right.
Well, tell me a little bit about what people can expect when they come see the show. What's the kind of show usually look like?
Well, we think of it as the Sons of the Pioneers meet Monty Python. It's just a lot of it's off the wall humor, and it's beautiful classic Western music. We have two of the most brilliant instrumentalists in swing and Western music, and a lot of few original songs and some real classics that everybody expects and will remember, like Back in the Saddle Again and Riders in the Sky, Tumbling Tumbleweeds, Cool Water.
Nice. Well, this is all happening at the JDHS Auditorium. It's going to be 7 o'clock on Monday night, and I got to tell you, Doug, people here are so excited that you're coming into town. There's a whole bunch of buckaroos and buckarettes that are ready to go see you guys and have a fantastic time on Monday night.
I'm glad. If people don't know who we are, they may remember us in Woody's Roundup and the Toy Story 2. That's sort of our big deal, and that led to the albums on the Disney label, and both those albums won Grammy Awards. So they'll remember us singing Woody's Roundup right here every day.
That's right. I mean, that's an amazing thing to be associated with, that whole Pixar and Disney, such quality films, and definitely, I think you've got the new buckaroos are listening because of that. But I think the buckaroos more my age remember you guys just from your long career.
It's funny, you know, to the show, let you come up to the video.
Well, hey, Ranger Doug. That's Ranger Doug from Riders in the Sky. Unfortunately, you can hear his phone's breaking up just a little bit there. But we appreciate Doug, you so much calling in for this, and we're going to be seeing you Monday night. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Cindy. Great to talk to you. Happy trails.
Happy trails to you as well.
Yippee-yay! There'll be no wedding bells for today. I got spurs that jingle, jangle, jingle.
That's Juno Afternoon for today. Thanks so much for tuning in. Appreciate it. Thanks to all of my guests, and that includes Ranger Doug there from Riders in the Sky, Rabbi Dov Gartenberg, also Don Birdseye, Phil Smith, Bob Schroeder and Skip Scheel as well. Thanks so much to all my guests today. It's been great talking to you today. Once again, we've got mostly cloudy skies forecast for tonight and for tomorrow with a slight chance of rain, but then partly cloudy skies Thursday night, and that's going to last through Saturday. So looking up there in the weather forecast. Coming up next is All Things Considered.